Good morning, everyone. I'm John Myrie, and welcome to the Wisconsin Northland Outdoors. On this week's show, we have some tips for you from Jarrett McCarthy down at Hayward Bait and Bottle, and then we talk ice fishing with our local DNR biologist, Max Walter, and then lastly, some ice fishing tips from pro angler Keith Cavias. Lots to cover on this week's show, all coming up right after these messages.
Get on the water today with the Lund Catch of the Year at Hayward Power Sports. We have Lunds in stock, rigged and ready with Mercury outboards. Save $1,000 on a 1650 Angler SS, $2,500 on a Lund Impact, or a whopping $3,000 on a 1975 Pro V Sport. Lund features boating's best warranty with 3 years of bow to stern and lifetime hull coverage. And no boat holds its value better. Get your Lund at Hayward Power Sports, just 10 minutes east of Hayward on Highway 77.
Riding along in my automobile.
Bumping into things unexpectedly? Make your first choice for collision repair, Ernie's Auto Body, featuring the most advanced collision repair facility in Northwest Wisconsin. With a state-of-the-art spray bake-down draft paint booth for that better-than-new finish, laser technology for precision frame alignment, loaner cars available, computerized estimates, written guarantees, and documented unmatched customer service, the clear choice is Ernie's Auto Body, south of Hayward on Highway 63 and Nursery Road, where quality is no accident.
Lynn's Custom Meats and Catering welcomes you to stop by for their great lunch menu, and while you're there, Lynn's also has a great selection of custom-cut meats and sausages, as well as many varieties of snack sticks, jerky, fresh cheese curds, and much more. Lynn's is open Mondays through Fridays from 9 to 5:30 and 9 to 4 on Saturdays. Lynn's Custom Meats and Catering in Hayward. We're recording this week's show down at Hayward Bait and Bottle, and I got Jarrett McCarthy in here. Jarrett, big difference between last week we recorded the show and this week. Now we can start talking ice fishing almost.
Oh, I'm so excited. We got cold weather. We got snow out there. We got a whole bunch of ice all over the lake.
Well, you know, safe recommendations is 4 inches for foot travel, I believe. And, you know, there'll be guys out on a lot less than that, I know. But the recommendation is 4.
Yep, I usually aim for about 3, but I mean 3 is good, solid, you know, ice out there, and you know, nothing that's white and flaky out there or what have you, but 4 is really good standard to go by.
Let's talk about ice fishing. You know, what do you think it's going to be like? I know we're coming out of the fall with a lot of food in the lakes. We had a tremendous amount of forage for these fish. We had all the bug hatches, we had fry, minnows, these fish. Come in the fall here, a lot of these fish were really heavy. They had a lot of weight on them, and they're still eating good. And with that much food out there, what do you think we're going to have?
I think it'll still be a good early ice season. You know, we've got a lot of food in the systems right now, but, you know, looking forward to winter, a lot of those fish should still continue to pack on weight until we hit, you know, end of December, and then we'll get into the really cold January, February, like we usually do, when they'll really slow down, they'll really start getting picky with their food. But I think we're in for a really good early ice season.
You know, and a lot of people think deep water. That's the thing in their mind goes in the fall, especially. Later we go, the deeper we go on a lot of species, but you can get at that deeper water in the early part of the ice season, but yet there's going to be a lot of fish that are up shallow.
There really will be, and that's what a lot of fish will do on a lot of our systems, is that all the remaining weed growth that you've got up shallow is going to draw a lot of your little minnows, a lot of your insects, you know, the bottom part of the food chain, and that'll in turn bring in your panfish, and then obviously your game fish will follow your panfish. So, you know, early ice, one of the things that I really like to do is I target those shallower weeds. And I mean, you can be in as shallow as 2 or 3 feet of water, but you know, as long as those weeds are healthy and you know, somewhat green or whatever, they're going to attract fish. Now, getting out on those weeds is going to be just as hairy as going out onto deeper water, not because it's not safe, but because if you're in such shallow water, any tiny little step, any movement you make, things scatter really, really fast. So if you're looking to get out on early ice panfish, early ice walleye, get out there early, set up, quit making so much noise on the ice, and just sit and camp on a spot, or, you know, do your best not to make as much noise out there, because that's going to be key on early ice.
You know, and you mentioned weeds and green weeds, and if you got a question, if you can't pull some weeds up, you can drop an AquaView or something down and take a look. You can see if you've got green weeds, because once the weeds start to brown up, they eat the oxygen up. But you were talking about the fish being kind of spooky. it's unbelievable how spooky they can get, even once they move out in deeper water.
Oh, of course. You know, even when they're moving out into 10, 15 feet of water, you know, when you're walking around or you have, you know, when we get good ice out there and you've got your wheelers and your, or even a truck, you know, around here, that's going to displace a lot of fish. And a lot of times you're going to have to sit and wait for about a half hour until those fish calm down and start moving back in. So, you know, noise isn't just something that you have to worry about early ice. It's throughout the ice season.
Not just a winter thing. I want to make a point on this. It happens in the summertime too. I remember one time we were on one of the lakes up here. We had a tremendous walleye bite going, and we were in like 15 to 17 feet of water. And the guy in the front of the boat, remember the boat I was using had one of them plastic live well lids. He slammed the lid shut on it, and boy, I could see the fish disappear on my screen. And that was the end of that walleye bite, because even 15, 16 feet over the top of them jigging, boy, that thump in the bottom of the boat, they beat it.
Yeah, and there they were, gone. Yep. Those fish aren't dumb underneath the water. They'll feel your presence, whether you're, you know, directly over them or if you're off a ways. So, you know, if you're out scouting looking for fish, sometimes your best option is just to park in one area and just go make a radius around your vehicle, drill a whole bunch of holes, come back to your holes after you've drilled them, after it's had time to set, and then take your look. Don't base whether a fish is there or not on your very first hole that you drill, because a lot of times you're going to spook everything out of there and you're going to have to wait a little bit for those fish to calm down and come back.
You know, one of the guys I used to know up here, he used to drive around with the truck. He'd get, if there were nothing going on, he'd drive around to all the tip-ups with the truck. He'd say, get the pike moving around, and then he'd start getting flags, too. I guess it gets fish moving, I guess.
Yeah, we've done that, too. We call those fish drives. Whenever we have a slow day out on the ice, everybody will jump on the snowmobile or the four-wheeler, and we'll go do laps around the tip-ups. We'll wait about 5 minutes, and then off we'll go to a flag.
Well, let's talk about, you know, what are we expect to be catching early in the season? I know walleye is a big thing everybody goes after.
Yeah, walleyes will be the number one fish on everybody's list around here. It seems like early ice walleyes are probably some of the easiest times throughout the winter that you're going to be able to get on walleye. And you're also going to have some guys that are out looking for pike, crappie, bluegill. There's even a couple places around here where you can get some perch. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of species that you can go out and target and have success with early ice.
You know, and pike, I want to remind people, pike are just as good eating as walleyes, I think, and there's a lot more plentiful up here.
Yep, they got a really, really good white meat. You can do so many different things with them. You can pickle them, you can fry them. So, yeah, I mean, don't be afraid to keep a pike and try it. They're just as good as walleye.
Let's talk about shop here real quick. You guys are all geared up for the ice fishing season and for the hunting season, so you're geared up for all that stuff, and you got a lot of new product in here.
Yeah, we sure do. We're set up really well for ice this year. We've still got product coming through the door. You know, we just had a couple different boxes of 13 fishing come through, so got a lot of new product. We got a lot of, you know, old standby product, you know, your beaver dams, your ice augers and what have you. But we're ready for you, whether it be ice fishing, whether it be hunting. We're here for you.
Anyway, Jared, I want to thank you for coming on here.
Thanks for having me again, John.
Well, folks, you know, we need to take a break right now and hear from some of the fine sponsors that make this show possible every week. When we come back, we'll be talking ice fishing with our local DNR biologist, Max Walter. So stay tuned. We'll be back right after these messages. Hunters and Anglers, Hayward Bait and Bottle is your one-stop sport and bottle shop in Hayward. They have a huge selection of ice fishing gear, including portable shelters, power augers, electronics, beaver dam tip-ups, ice rods, and just about anything you'll need for ice fishing. They also have archery supplies, bows, crossbows, muzzleloaders, ammo, and much more to help you enjoy the outdoors. While you're there, check out the bottle shop for a full selection of beer, wine, and liquor, too. Hayward Bait and Bottle is your one-stop sport and bottle shop.
The Hayward Lakes Visitors and Convention Bureau in Sawyer County, Wisconsin welcomes you to our Northwoods hometown. No matter the season, no matter the activity, you'll always be surrounded by our great outdoors. What more could you ask for in a vacation destination? Woods, waters, world-class events. Contact us for information on lodging, dining, attractions, events, trail conditions, and more. Order your free vacation guide and start planning your getaway today. Visit us at haywardlakes.com or call 1-800-724-2992.
The Sea-Doo pre-order sales event is on at Hayward Power Sports. The best way to guarantee a new 2023 for next year, and the only way to get the Sea-Doo RXPX Apex 300 Exclusive Edition. As a bonus, you'll get 2 years of BRP warranty coverage for free. Whether you're looking for a traditional Sea-Doo personal watercraft or a Sea-Doo Switch pontoon boat, this is the best way to get what you want. Or we still have a few 2022 models in stock that offer no payments and no interest financing for 6 months. See Hayward Power Sports today, just 10 minutes east of Hayward on Highway 77.
Welcome back to another segment of this week's Wisconsin Northland Outdoors. And this part of the show is brought to you by the Hayward Lakes Visitor and Convention Bureau. For more information on vacationing and lodging here in the Hayward Lakes area, check out their website at haywardlakes.com. Well, folks, you know, one of the people I get on here from time to time to talk about fishing is our local fisheries biologist, Max Walter. This is an older talk I had with Max about ice fishing, but lots of great information if you're heading out on the lakes this winter. Max, we're in the ice fishing season right now, and there's a couple things I'd like to talk to you about on ice fishing. And I think ice fishing is a growing sport. It seems like it's really taken off with the advent of newer equipment, newer electronics, and even the clothing and the comfort we've got.
Yes, and we have statistics that back up your feeling there, John. You are correct. Ice fishing has been getting more popular. There's more hours spent by anglers out on the ice now than there used to be. So, you know, I think that's really a great thing, especially because, you know, we're here in Wisconsin. It feels like some years, 9 months of the year is ice fishing. So it's great that people are able to kind of take advantage of this season and get out there for, honestly, some of the best fishing the whole year round if you can stomach the conditions, which is, again, easier now with some of the technology.
You know, the trade-off to that is, though, that from what I see from my standpoint, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is also a time where, under certain circumstances, some of the fish, especially panfish, can take a pretty substantial hit from angling pressure.
Yep, and that's something we're looking at, too, is, you know, how does this change in, you know, the amount of fishing that's happening and how that fishing is distributed throughout the year? You know, how is that impacting populations? So, yeah, panfish, definitely one of the big targets. You know, and just in general, you know, ice fishing is harvest fishing, right?
Right.
You know, not many people are doing catch and release ice fishing. You get that big walleye, you let it go maybe. Accidentally catch a muskie, right. Obviously you let
or
it go.
Or a big pike.
Yeah, a big pike. I hope people are doing that. But most of what people are out there to do is they want panfish that are coming home with them, some pike, either some fillets or some picklers. So it's a harvest time of year, right?
Yeah, and lakes where they tend to concentrate fish. You've got lakes where they'll still be along the weed edges and stuff, but then there are a significant number of lakes, and especially flowages, where they tend to migrate into that deepest basin, and around that basin, so a majority of your fish population is concentrated, which if anglers want to put a lot of pressure on and not be selective as what they're taking or how they're fishing, we can see a negative result from it.
Yes, that potential definitely exists. If you think about, you know, winter and how fish congregate, you're playing on a reduced playing field. And I think, again, the technology comes into play there, where it's easier to get right back on that crib you were at before that you know is holding fish, or it's easier to get farther out on the lake with a UTV, easier to stay out and fish longer. So, yeah, you know, that's something that anglers should be aware of and, you know, kind of think about from their own ethical standards as far as, you know, how many do I need to take at this time of year? Another thing that I know you've brought up in the past is when you're catching fish that are way down deep. Suspended crappies are a good example. You know, what's the fate of those fish if you're trying to release them? And instead of sorting through and, you know, trying to take the 10 biggest out of the 30 you catch, might be better for the fishery if you take the first 10 you catch and call it a day at that point, because the ones you release may not be doing as well.
Seems like the magic figure there seems to be about 25 feet. Anything, if they're suspended at 25 feet or they're deeper than 25 feet, those fish seem to get that barotrauma where their air bladder swells up. They just don't seem to make it when you put them back down the hole.
Yes, and this was an issue that, you know, I was talking with some folks in the Minnesota DNR about it, specifically with crappies. And, you know, some of the things they were observing is, there's certain lakes where you can bring them up from 20 feet, 25 feet, no problem. They seem to go down just fine. There's other lakes where, you know, 15 to 20 feet and they're having all kinds of problems.
Wow,
so
that's interesting.
Yeah, so they're wondering, you know, maybe if it's related somehow to, you know, the type of the lake and things like that. So I guess, you know, there's definitely kind of an area there, and I think you're right in the neighborhood with that 20-foot cutoff, but it may not be a hard and fast rule. It might vary a little bit, so... something to be aware of.
And you're really sorting fish. I mean, I actually know a lot of people that I've run into this. I won't keep a crappie unless it's 10 or 11 inches. And that's actually a negative for our fisheries, because if you take all the big fish, as that pyramid goes up, the fish number of bigger fish gets smaller and smaller. And, right. You know, you start picking off the big ones pretty soon, and all you've got is the smaller ones.
Yes. So, I mean, even if every fish that you're releasing under that size is surviving, as you mentioned, that's still a problem, because you're cropping off the top end of that size distribution. If that happens for a long enough time by highly efficient anglers, that top end size is just going to keep going down. And we see that happen all the time for panfish. So from a fisheries biology standpoint, you're better harvesting from kind of the middle of the size distribution you're catching,
the most common, eight inches, nine inches,
or whatever the most common size is you're catching. If you happen to be on a lake where they're all 10 and 11 inches, that's what you're taking home. Right. But yeah, if you have to catch 5 or 6, 8 or 9 inches to get a few 10 and 11s, you know, it'd be good to see some of those 8 and 9 inches go home too.
Bluegill's a whole different thing though. Now, bluegills, and I got onto this from Burl Borsdoliver, Minnesota, the research over there, is that it's actually the big bluegills are what everybody wants, the 9 and 10 inch bluegills. But when those are removed, you wind up with a population of smaller bluegills, because the big bluegills are the males and they actually dictate the whole size structure hierarchy of the lake.
Yes, so a similar concept, but yeah, it's a lot more, it's driven by the fish in a lot of cases. And if there aren't those big bluegills around, the size structure is going to get small and in many cases stay small for quite a long time. It's really hard to fix a bluegill population that used to have 8 and 9 inch fish once they're gone.
And so the best thing to do is to keep the 7 and 8 inch fish and throw the 9s and the bigger back, I think.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, as far as ice fishing, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but there are a lot of things go on under the ice in the wintertime. You still have zooplankton going on coming up, which changes, you know, your fish activity seem to get more active toward evening. And I don't know, is it a matter of a light thing, or is it just the activity level in the lake that seems to make the fishing pick up in the evening?
It's all driven by the light, ultimately. So when the light starts to get lower, that's when those zooplankton and those bugs are going to start moving. They're going to come out of the deeper water areas and start coming up a little shallower, or come out of the weeds, whatever. So they feel like they're safer under low light conditions, and they may spend the whole night eating, but that's why that half hour right before dark is kind of the magic time, especially on certain lakes, where all the panfish are going to be out really on the prowl, trying to pick off as many of them as they can while they can still see them.
That explains why, as you get later in the wintertime, well, of course, there's an oxygen factor that comes into play, too, but later in the wintertime, as you get more snow cover and thicker ice, you have less light down there, so all that stuff happens more earlier in the day and sometimes all day long.
Yep, exactly. Yep. There's also a really interesting study, I don't recall where exactly it was done, but they were looking at how zooplankton were distributed throughout the lake, and if there's patchy snow on top of the ice, some places there's snow, some places where there's open ice, the zooplankton were going to be under that snow, using it for shade, basically like an animal would use a tree for shade, right?
Yeah.
So, kind of cool, so might be something to try. If you're having a hard time locating panfish, they might be under the snow, following the zooplankton.
You know, how are our panfish populations doing up here from your studies and everything?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of lakes that have been pretty stable. Some that we've seen some increases in size. Panfish tend to be a lot more, you know, resilient to change than walleye and some of the other types of, you know, predator species.
One thing you've been advocating, and I have as well, too, is that rather than put all the pressure on the other fish like the crappies, the bluegills, and walleyes, we've got a pretty good high number of northern pike out there, which are really good eating. And if a guy wants to harvest some meat, that's probably the easiest and quickest way to get some fish and still maintain our crappie and walleye and other fishery.
Yeah, in general, I would say pike are underutilized as a food fish, and a lot of people seem to have a real aversion to keeping anything under even like 24 inches. And boy, I'll tell you, you can easily flay a 22-inch pike. Or you can pickle, and a lot of people seem to be getting into that. But, you know, pike are abundant. They're fairly easy to catch. We keep a long season on them and liberal limits, you know, with the intention that people can harvest lots of them, especially around here where we're trying to manage lots of these lakes for muskies, right? And so having high numbers of pike kind of gets in the way of that. So it's definitely a fish we have in surplus in most lakes. Now, there are a couple exceptions I do want to mention. You know, there's a few lakes where pike are the only Osaka species. We don't have muskies, and we want to grow big pike. Nelson Lake's a good example, Shattuck Lake, and there's a couple others, and those are ones where, you know, yeah, we're maybe trying to manage for a little more of a trophy fishery for pike, but most of our lakes, especially ones with muskies, we'd love to see more pike harvest.
And one other good reason why to keep smaller pike, they're better eating, mm-hmm. and because the older a predator gets, the more it carries as far as any contaminants. If you got mercury in a lake, for instance, and I think there's a trace amount of mercury everywhere, basically, so it'll accumulate in the predators as the years go on, so the younger fish, or i.k. the smaller fish, are going to be better eating.
Yes, absolutely true. Mercury is more common in predators, and as they age, they pick up more. If you think about like a 21, 22 inch pike around here is typically 4, maybe 5 years old, depending on the lake and the sex a little bit. Once you get up to like the high 20s or the 30s, you know, that fish is probably 10 to 15 years old. So this had three times longer to, you know, accumulate stuff. So those younger fish are healthier for a few reasons.
Yeah. Well, you know, you said age, you know, you said a pike of 22 inches about 4 years. Compare that to a crappie that's 10 inches, what, 8 to 10 years?
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, easier to replace it. It's a faster growing crop, I think.
Yes, that's another great point is we have an almost unlimited supply of northerns that will be coming up. You know, they're never going to have extended periods of bad year classes. There's always going to be more northerns. So it's kind of I mentioned it's a surplus, it's also kind of a constant surplus. So get the tip-ups out. They're a lot of fun, especially if you're fishing with kids. You cannot beat pike for winter ice fishing action.
Kids love tip-ups, and pike and tip-ups go together.
You want to see that flag going up, find a weed bed, put some shiners down there, and let the kids chase.
Max, been very interesting again talking to you. I want to thank you very much for coming on here and giving us some good information.
Thanks, and good luck to everybody out there ice fishing.
Well, folks, you know, we need to take yet another break and hear from even more of the fine sponsors that make this show possible every week. When we come back, we'll be talking ice fishing with pro angler Keith Cabayas. So stay tuned. We'll be back right after these messages.
This year, Dr. Ostrander and his staff at Hayward Animal Hospital will be celebrating 30 years. They thank you for your patronage. Hayward Animal Hospital continues to accept new clients and offers urgent care appointments daily. For same-day urgent care or emergency surgery, make sure you call early in the day as appointments fill rapidly. They open at 8 a.m. Hayward Animal Hospital is located 1 mile east of Hayward on Highway B. Call 715-634-8971.
If you'd like to have your time fishing be more enjoyable and productive, hiring a fishing guide can be a good investment. Whether it's learning more about fish patterns throughout the year, learning how to use your depth finder to find the best spots and fish, learn how to use that GPS to get the most out of it, or learn better boat control, a day on the water with a guide can really help you to be a better angler, as well as make a day on the lake very enjoyable. To book a guide trip this year or get more information, you can find us on the internet at www.wiscnorthlandoutdoors.com and then just click on Area Guides.
Welcome back to the last segment of this week's Wisconsin Northland Outdoors. And folks, on this part of the show, we'll be talking ice fishing electronics, walleye fishing, and a lot more with pro angler Keith Cabayas.
Well, Keith, you know, when it comes to walleye fishing in the wintertime, you know, any tips for our listeners out there on finding fish? I mean, in summertime, you know, we can run around, move around a little bit more, but it's harder to move around on the ice.
Yeah, I think one of the things to first do is kind of look at the kind of areas that you're fishing. If you're on a place on the lake where you've got structure, maybe a reef or a shoreline break or something like that, where the fish might be hanging on that and using it as an ambush point, waiting for the bait to come to them, and they're kind of hiding on the break or behind rocks or something, that's a real good place to drill a lot of holes, because you need to find where they're actually living on that structure. Conversely, if you're fishing in a place where it's maybe like a big mud basin or a flat, the fish are very likely on those big mud basins to actually be swimming around looking for the bait. They aren't holding in one little particular spot like they were on that structure. So in that case, a lot of times it's a little bit easier because you can literally wait for them to come to you. You can actually wait for them to kind of mill into you and find you. So based on the kind of situation that you're fishing or the kind of bottom that you're fishing, depends on whether you should drill a lot of holes or just kind of wait them out and wait for you to come.
When it comes to that type of a scenario, do you find that you get better action during the daytime deep versus in the evening at night or shallow or what?
Well, actually, day and nighttime bites more go to water clarity, maybe even than the type of bottom that you're fishing. What happens with walleyes, and this is in the summer or in the winter, is that walleyes like to have a sight advantage. They have very, very good eyes. They can see a long way in the water. So what they want to do is have a low light condition. So if you're on a lake that's kind of stained or dingy, then they'll actually bite all day long. And it really doesn't matter if they're on a flat or they're on structure. They'll actually bite all day long because they can see better in that dirty water than the bait fish can. Conversely, if you're on a clear water lake, then the only time they really have an advantage is when the sun's going up, when the sun's coming down, or during the night. So that's why you have those little brief periods of activity, sunrise and sunset, because that's when the walleyes have the advantage. So it's more based on water clarity, I think, than even on the type of structure that you're fishing.
You know, when it comes to walleye fishing in the wintertime, in the summertime it's different. We troll, we can cast, we can move around, do a lot of different things, but even then, the type of lures and lure action makes a difference in the wintertime.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. And like you said, you're limited in with ice fishing to that, you know, 8 or 10 inch hole. So a lot of times you've got to do things to entice that fish. You know, like you said, in the summer we can jig and pull a jig back or cast a crankbait and pull it back and kind of have different actions on it. And you really got to think about doing that too when you're out ice fishing. So two things that I do a lot for ice fishing is, one, you can pick baits that actually will have an action outside of the hole. Typically what those are called is like a glide bait, a jigging rapala. There's something called a moonshine minnow, shiver minnows. When you pull on the bait, they actually jump to the side or glide out, and then they come back and sweep back into the hole. So they actually have some action outside of the hole, and that can be very, very good for attracting fish. The other thing, though, to really consider is the way that you can attract a fish is in an upward direction. And a lot of people don't realize it, but a walleye will actually chase a lure a long way up. A lot of times they'll see that fish on their screen, on their depth finder or whatever, and they think they got to get right in front of it and kind of entice it and jiggle around right in front of it. But actually a very good thing to do is actually pull it away from that fish. When that fish thinks something is escaping from it or getting away from it, many times a predator fish like a walleye, that's when they'll want to hit it. So if you're fishing with a spoon or you're fishing with a jig or anything and that fish comes in and you jiggle it a little and they don't take it, the first thing you should always think about doing is lifting that rod tip up about 2 feet, jiggle it some more. Hopefully that fish will chase up after it. If it does and it still doesn't fit, still doesn't bite, actually, I a lot of times have to start reeling my reel because I run out of places for my rod to go, and I lift it even higher. I've had fish come up 10, 12 feet off the bottom before they finally think, I better hit this or it's going to get out of the hole, and they'll hit it coming up. So think about action when you're ice fishing. But again, you don't have all the options of summer, but you can make lures jump out of the hole, and you can also raise them up in the hole and a lot of times get them to bite.
When it comes to ice fishing, you know, for a long time, everybody's out there, it's the flashers, the Vexlars, the flashers.
Mm-hmm.
I know I switched to a liquid crystal screen here a few years ago. Now, you guys, I understand, are using strictly the liquid crystal screens too, right?
Well, I'd say I switched because you did, but actually, I've been fishing liquid crystal for probably 10, 12 years now through the ice. What's interesting is there's a lot of myths about liquid crystal. They use too much battery. They use a little bit more battery, but a regular battery lasts in my liquid crystal unit, well, you know, a full long day of fishing easily lasts that long. The other misconception is that an LCD unit, you know, one with a display on it, doesn't record the fish as fast. So, for example, you can't see your jig or whatever. That's all just false. It's absolutely false. You can actually lift your jig up, watch jigs move on that LCD, watch them drop, watch fish come in. The big, big advantage of an LCD is you've got some history. You don't have to sit there and stare at that screen and miss a fish coming in, or miss some bait coming through, or miss a high fish coming through. With an LCD unit, it's actually going to record that, and you get some history on that screen. So if you look up or look down, or you're switching lure, and all of a sudden you look back at your screen, you can say, oh my goodness, a fish came in, it's looking at my jig, I can actually catch that fish. And you can very easily miss that with a flasher. So I love that it has a history. I love that it draws me a picture. I can see how aggressively fish are coming in. Are they slowly coming in and the line coming up from the bottom that's a fish gradually comes up to the level of my lure? Or do they just dart in and they're right at my lure? And I can see that picture on the screen. I can see the cadence of my jig or my lure or my spoon or whatever's down there and realize that, oh man, I just triggered a fish to bite. I can look back and say, oh, here's how fast I was hopping that jig. So that history and that picture I think, make it so much more easy. And believe me, you do not lose information. If I thought I wasn't getting the same information as a flasher guy, I'd have a flasher. But I think I'm getting the same information. The only thing is, I'm getting it in a nice picture and not just a little flashing light.
Interesting stuff. Thanks, Lucky.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, folks, you know, we're about out of time for this week's show. I'd like to remind everyone out there that if you miss a show, go to our website at wnoradio.net. And from there, you can link to our podcast site. And the show is also on Spotify and Google Podcasts every week. And also, if you're looking for information on vacationing and lodging here in the Hayward Lakes area, check out the Hayward Lakes Visitor and Convention Bureau website at haywardlakes.com. Thanks for listening, folks. We're out of time, and we'll be back again next week with another interesting show for you.
Listen with me, I'm going to take you there to our Wisconsin Outdoors, our Wisconsin Outdoors.
This program has been produced and hosted entirely by Wisconsin Northland Outdoor Communications. Any and all views expressed are not necessarily those of the station.